Support for this podcast comes from the Central Valley Journalism Collaborative, connecting communities with the resources, infrastructure, and networks to ensure a vibrant local free press.
From KVPR in Fresno, this is Central Valley Daily. It's Wednesday, October 22nd. I'm Elizabeth Arkalian. A recent proposal by California legislators aimed to crack down on what's known as transnational repression.
Members of the Sikh community in America have said that they experienced intimidation, digital threats, or even surveillance and increased scrutiny on their houses of worship.
But the law was vetoed by Governor Gavin Newsom. We will learn more about what the implications might be in just a few minutes. But first, these headlines. Valley House Representative Vince Fong says California has lost $9 million since the federal government has been shut down. The Republican put out an op-ed in a conservative blog this week where he pressured Democratic leaders to agree to a deal to reopen the government. Republicans say they want to pass a short-term funding bill to keep the government running. Democrats are pushing to negotiate health care subsidies in order to agree to a budget deal. A Merced City Council member announced his resignation during Monday night's council meeting. According to our news partner, the Merced Focus, Ronnie DeAnda explained he has had instances where his memory has faltered, citing side effects of a stroke. The council will decide whether the vacancy will be filled by an appointment or through a special election. DeAnda's last day is October 31st. Monday was the last day to register to vote in California's November 4th special election to determine new House redistricting maps. Ahead of the deadline, California leaders are reminding voters of their rights. This includes receiving a new ballot to correct a mistake and the availability of election materials in a language other than English, among others. Secretary of State Shirley Weber says the state will not tolerate voter intimidation or providing misleading information.
Some people think that it would be funny to do this. Maybe not when they're bailing you out of jail will it be funny. These kinds of things are serious. These are criminal acts.
Mail-in ballots must be postmarked by Election Day, November 4th. If you've missed the registration deadline, California has same-day registration where you will be given a provisional ballot. It's been a year since invasive golden mussels were first spotted in the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta at the Port of Stockton. Cap Radio's Manola Sakaita has an update on their spread.
Golden mussels can grow up to around 2 inches in size and are highly adaptable. Their presence can degrade ecosystems and clog up important water infrastructure. California Department of Fish and Wildlife officials say the mussels spread south to places that receive water from the Delta, but it's still most present in the Delta region. Martha Volkoff is the CDFW's Invasive Species Program Manager.
In the Delta, the reality will be, unfortunately, living with golden mussels in perpetuity. I don't anticipate this problem will go away.
As far as she knows, she says the golden mussel has not spread to waterways that are not connected to the Delta. She says it's important that boaters keep their vessels cleaned, drained, and dry after every use to help prevent the spread, even if they're in waters where the golden mussel hasn't yet been reported. In Sacramento, I'm Manola Sakaita.
California announced it seized more than $200 million worth of illegal cannabis in the third quarter of the year. The governor's office announced on Tuesday that a task force conducted operations in more than a dozen counties in the state between July and September. That includes Kern County. A total of 18 people were arrested in those operations. Agents also destroyed over 200,000 pounds of marijuana plants.
Few things in life are certain, but astronomical auto repair bills, that's a sure thing. If the time has come to say goodbye to your old ride, consider donating it to KVPR. The process is free, it'll help fund the independent reporting you rely on, and you'll get a tax break. Visit kvpr.org/cars today for more information and to start the donation process.
And now to our main story. Governor Gavin Newsom vetoed 123 proposed laws at the end of the recent legislative session that ended earlier this month. Among them was a contentious bill that divided Indians of the Hindu and Sikh faiths in California. Senate Bill 509 would have required the state to develop training for law enforcement officials around transnational repression. That's when a foreign government reaches across borders to control or harass people from their country, typically for political reasons. The bill was largely seen as targeting Indians in California, and Sikhs have spoken out about repression against them in particular. To break down why the bill came about and how different faith groups have reacted to the law's veto, I spoke with Richa Carmarker. She's a national reporter for the news website Religion News Service. I asked her to start by explaining transnational repression a little more.
The FBI defines transnational repression as any attempts by a foreign government to reach beyond their borders to intimidate, silence, or harass members of their diaspora and exile communities in other countries besides their own. Most often, the people targeted could be political activists, dissidents, or opponents of the country's government in question. And some examples of transnational repression have come from China, Iran, and India in particular.
Okay, so today we're going to discuss a controversial bill in the California State Legislature that was designed to address transnational repression, and we'll get to where that stands in a minute. But first, I thought you could give us an overview of sort of what the goal was with Senate Bill 509.
Yeah, absolutely. The bill was introduced in February of this year by Senator Anna Caballero, and it would have required California's Office of Emergency Services to develop training for the state's law enforcement agencies to adequately recognize and respond to transnational repression, which has been the subject of advocacy for six civil rights organizations over the past 2 years.
Okay, and this is actually making me think of an event that occurred in Canada a year or two ago. Could you tell us about that instance? I feel like that sort of illustrates what we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in 2024, Canada found evidence of and formally accused the Indian government of involvement in the murder of Hardeep Singh Nijjar, who was, shot in a Gurdwara parking lot. He was a prominent pro-Khalistan activist, which Khalistan is the Sikh independent homeland apart from India. And then in 2024, the United States Department of Justice also indicted an Indian government employee for directing an assassination plot on a Khalistani activist in New York. And both Nijjar and Gurpatwant Singh Panoon, who is the target in New York, were members of a group called Six for Justice. And that group is banned in India.
And I do want to say that you report this bill is seen as largely aimed at India. Is that because of these cases or why is that the case?
Yeah, absolutely. The bill was vocally supported by many members of the Sikh and Punjabi diaspora for the past couple of years, as I've said, have seen a documented increase of transnational intimidation from India and Indian nationals when it comes to activists who support the independent Sikh homeland of Khalistan, who are often considered politically dissident to the Indian state. And on top of, you know, these assassination plots and the actual murder of Hardeep Singh Nijjar in Canada, members of the Sikh community in America have said that they experienced intimidation, digital threats, or even surveillance and increased scrutiny on their houses of worship, which is really striking fear in a lot of community members who are not sure of how their freedom of speech in terms of Khalistan, you know, would be monitored.
Now, Governor Gavin Newsom actually vetoed this bill, despite the fact that it had unanimous support from the state Senate and Assembly. What was the reasoning that he gave for that?
Yeah, so Gavin Newsom, in his veto statement, said that the Office of Emergency Services has already developed an existing transnational repression awareness class, which is available to law enforcement. He also said that the issue of transnational repression would be best addressed through administrative action in coordination with federal agencies. So Newsom also said that the bill was liable to make California less flexible in its response to the issue in case codifying any definitions related to this kind of training or transnational repression would be inconsistent with the federal government's existing or future work on this issue.
You know, this bill was co-sponsored by a local legislator from our region, Assembly Member Jasmeet Baines of Bakersfield, who is Sikh as well. What did she have to say about the governor's veto?
Yeah, she actually released a statement that kind of connected Governor Gavin Newsom's actions to veto this bill with a previous bill that really made headlines last year, which was Senate Bill 403, a bill that would ban caste discrimination in California and was similarly opposed by major Hindu groups. Assemblymember Baines kind of connected the two decisions and was unhappy about, you know, Newsom's vetoes, but she said she was grateful for the Sikh community finding its voice and its allies through this process and for finally having a seat at the table. She did say, quote, "One bill cannot make or break my community. We stand against hate, racism, and fear mongering."
You mentioned Hindus. I want to note that this bill divided Sikh and Hindu Americans and that the governor's veto sort of added fire to the flame, so to speak. At least that's what you indicate in your reporting. Can you help us understand that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely very complicated. Unfortunately, we're seeing a serious rift in the American context when it comes to the idea of Khalistan, which, again, I'll mention is the autonomous state for Sikhs in Punjab that has been gaining more momentum in the US and Canada, where thousands of Sikhs have come out to Khalistan referendums to show their support for this cause. On the other hand, many Hindu advocacy groups, however, many of them who directly lobbied against Senate Bill 509, argued that the language surrounding foreign proxies and state actors in the bill was vague and that it could make opponents of Khalistan, many of whom are Hindus, seem to be agents of or aiding the Indian government. The reason being, many Hindus have agreed with the Indian government's stance on Khalistan, you know, arguing that it's an extremist movement that has inspired violence and terrorism. And recently, Hindus have pointed to an increase in temple vandalism across the country, where some have been spray painted with the phrase Khalistan Zindabad, which means long live Khalistan.
Certainly. And I've seen billboards and signs with this Khalistan movement. And I appreciate you explaining it, because I think a lot of folks who aren't a part of these religious minorities are kind of confused at this sort of, you know, tension within the culture.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it has ties back to the 1980s in India, but, you know, most notably in the diaspora context, Air India Flight 182 in 1985 is the worst terrorist attack in Canadian history and was carried out by Sikh militants involved in the Khalistan movement, kind of in retaliation for the events of India, in which Indira Gandhi, the Prime Minister at the time, carried out an attack on the Sikh's most prominent house of worship, the Golden Temple, in which thousands of Sikh people were murdered. And in retaliation afterwards as well, Indira Gandhi was murdered by her Sikh bodyguards, you know, in retaliation. So this really has deep roots in India, but it's just interesting to see, you know, how it translates to the diaspora at this moment.
Richa Carmarker, reporter with Religion News Service. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
And that is today's show. Today's episode was produced by Jonathan Linden, Carrie Klein, and KVPR, with support from the Central Valley Journalism Collaborative. I'm Elizabeth Arkalian. You can find the latest local news anytime at kvpr.org.
Sources and Methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.